You are listening to rudolfsteineraudio.com. This is a reading of a cycle of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled The World of the Senses and the World of the Spirit. This is lecture 3, given in Hanover on the 29th of December, 1911. In yesterday's lecture, we saw how our physical body is connected with our sense-perceptible world. We were shown that the human physical body consists, so to speak, of the matter we also find in the external sense-perceptible world, and which was also described yesterday as will. We can say, therefore, that in the outer sense-perceptible world there is all-pervading will, and that, in truth, there is also all-pervading will in the human physical body. And in this respect, the human body is a part of the external world of the senses. We found that behind the sense-perceptible world, there lies the world of coming into being and dying away. And we also found that, in its true nature, this can be described as all-pervading wisdom. And in addition, we found that our human ether body, too, is made from the substance of the all-pervading wisdom. Within the human ether body and physical body, there is also what we call the astral body and the capital I. The human being as a whole, here on the earth, consists of physical body, ether body, astral body, and I. We have now reached the moment in our considerations when it will be necessary to introduce a subject which may be somewhat difficult to comprehend, but it will lead us very profoundly into an understanding of the world, and especially of the human being. We can assume as our starting point that physical body, ether body, astral body, and I have to be combined in some way. However, someone who, through clairvoyance, can examine this combination of the four members of the human being will have a particular impression, and we shall see how important it is to examine this impression. Namely, that the combination of these four elements of human nature is irregular. At some point, disorder must have entered into this combination. When examining the four members of the human being, one gains the impression that they are not arranged one within another as they should be, but are instead mingled in a disorderly way. At some point, disorder occurred. This is the impression one gains. When touching on the mysteries of life, we can realize what infinite depths are contained in occult religious archives when they are correctly interpreted. As we proceed, we shall see what is meant by this disorder, this irregularity, which is marvelously expressed in the Bible, with the words Lucifer speaks to the human being when he wants to lead him astray, quote, "Your eyes shall be opened, and ye shall know good and evil," close quote. These words are immensely profound. They do not simply mean that the eyes will be opened, for the eyes here represent all the senses together. If we understand Lucifer's words correctly, we can translate them as follows: all your senses will work in ways which would not be intended if you wanted to follow only the gods and not me also, meaning Lucifer. The senses work in a different manner on account of Lucifer's intervention. It is exceedingly difficult for people today to imagine how the senses work, and I shall have to make a good many grotesque explanations in order to show you how the senses would really work if disorder had not entered into the combination of the four elements of the human being through Lucifer. Grotesque explanations are needed, because people, as they are today, cannot imagine that something other than what they actually experience would have been correct from the beginning. What could be more natural or obvious today for someone asking what our eyes are for than to receive the reply, obviously they are for seeing? And you could say it would be his right to regard a person who says they are not for seeing as a fool. Yet from the very beginning of Earth's evolution, human eyes were not intended for seeing. They only became organs for seeing as a consequence of Lucifer's seduction. The actual faculty of sight for the human being was not intended to pass out through the eye toward the so-called things. It was intended to reach only as far as the eye, so that with every activity of seeing, if things had proceeded in accordance with the original intentions of the gods, human beings were supposed to become directly aware of their eyes. Instead of seeing something external, they were supposed to experience their eyes. EYE. They were supposed to become aware of the activity as such, at work, within their eyes. Whereas, nowadays, they are not aware of the activity of seeing except in its result, namely an encounter with some kind of external object. Human beings were supposed to become entangled in the activity much sooner than the moment when their seeing met an object. They were supposed to become aware of it in the eyes themselves through feeling their activity. Nowadays, this is almost impossible in the case of the eyes, unless a person has undergone a specific spiritual development. People can do it with their hands, since they can at least distinguish whether they are grasping an object or merely waving their hand about to no purpose. So in the case of the hands, a person can become aware of the hand's activity. But if people's power of sight is guided only by their eyes, they see nothing. This is how things are now. But originally, it was not the intention. Originally, with the eyes, or indeed the ears, or any other sense organ, a person was to have experienced the all-pervading will. He was to have been immersed in the all-pervading will, realizing that this was so in the specific way it affected his eyes. It was to have been similar in the case of the eyes as it is with the hands. When you take hold of something, you feel that it is hard if you find it difficult to get the better of it, and that it is soft if you can easily crush it. You feel what you are doing with your hand. This would be the case with the eyes as well. You would only feel the eyes, only directly experience the eyes as being directly linked with the all-pervading will, if your ether body were correctly inserted into your physical body. But now our ether body is not correctly inserted into our physical body. This is the peculiarity, that the ether body is not correctly inserted into the physical body. And this is only one example of the disorder within the human being. Not one of the human being's elements is correctly inserted into the others. Everything in the human being is in disarray. If there had been no Luciferic influence at work at the starting point of earthly evolution, all the insertions of the four members of the human being would have been different. This is what we must begin to understand, that something quite specific was brought about by the disorder which occurred through the influence of Lucifer on the bringing together of the four members of human nature. Let us explain this as follows. After first making a chart as an aid, and there's a chart on page 44, we can begin with the relationship of the physical body and the ether body as it is inserted within the physical body. If, as originally intended by the guiding gods, the ether body were to be poured into the physical body, the human being would hear all around him. It is difficult to find words for these things, since they are not actually thus, something akin to a continuous murmuring of all-pervading will. He would hear everywhere a differentiated all-pervading will. And he would perceive some difference in the workings of the will depending on whether he was aware of focusing his eyes or his ears and so on upon the world. These organs would enable him to experience the different aspects of the will, but he would everywhere sense its murmuring. This would happen if, as we have said, the ether body were inserted into the physical body in an orderly manner, as intended by the guiding gods. However, this is not the case. The ether body is not completely within the human physical body, and so a small portion of the physical body has been left to itself. The ether body does not fully permeate the physical body, so that in a certain way the physical body possesses a preponderance of its own activity which it should not have. Thus, there are parts of the human physical body which are not as completely permeated by the ether body as they should be, according to the original intentions of the divine spiritual beings who guide earthly evolution. The portions where the physical body is not permeated by the ether body in an orderly manner are those where the sense organs are formed. And it is because of this that the sense organs are shaped in the way they are today. Therefore, in every sense organ, there exists the highly remarkable situation in which purely physical manifestations occur, which are as though excluded from the general workings of life. Consider that you have in your eyes something which can be compared with a dark room, a photographic apparatus, which functions in accordance with physics. It is as though a piece of the physical body had been detached from the general permeation by the ether body. And this is in fact the case. It is the same with that characteristic of the inner ear, where in the inner passage there is something like a keyboard. The ether body is as though pushed back, so that the physical body produces physical effects of its own, which are not appropriately permeated by the ether body. Hence there arise what we term the sense impressions. Colors are experienced because the ether body does not permeate the eyes in the proper manner, so that purely physical effects occur. The same goes for all the sense organs. A preponderance of the physical body over the ether body comes about. So we can say, firstly, it is characteristic that in the relationship between the physical body and the ether body, there is a preponderance of the physical body over the ether body. If this preponderance of the physical body did not exist, the whole world of the sense perceptible as we know it today would be absent. Instead, we would find ourselves bound up with the surrounding world through experiencing everything as rippling, undulating, all-pervading will. If this preponderance of the physical body over the ether body were not the case, however, then we would feel ourselves to be active and not passive, just as we feel ourselves to be active when we stretch out a hand. This, then, is an exceedingly interesting fact which is revealed by a higher, a spiritual observation of the human being, namely that the entire sense-perceptible world rests on the ether body being as though pushed back from the sense organs, so that something is embedded in us which is purely physical world. This brings us, secondly, to the relationship between ether body and astral body. Again, it is not the case that the astral body permeates the ether body in the right way. Here there is a preponderance of the ether body over the astral body in human nature. Even with a low degree of clairvoyance, one can investigate the preponderance of the ether body over the astral body. No great powers are needed for this. The fact is that without this preponderance, human beings would never be able to weep, among much else. They would be unable to weep. When one observes a weeping human being, someone secreting this peculiar saline liquid from his ocular glands, one realizes that this is a situation in which the activity of the ether body is too strong over against the inserted activity of the astral body. The human being cannot fully bring over into his ether body what he experiences astrally. The ether body has a preponderance over the astral body, and this preponderance comes to expression in the way in which the ether body works back into the physical body, squeezing tears out of it. This is the case with all glandular secretions, with every process of glandular secretion within the human being. They are all due to a preponderance of the ether body over the astral body. And this preponderance, this disturbance of equilibrium, is expressed in the way it further affects the physical body. All glandular secretions are the consequence. If this were not the case, glandular activity would not result in secretions. If the astral body were fully integrated within the ether body, the activity of the astral body would be fully expended in the inner mobility, the inner activity of the glands. The glands would squeeze nothing out of themselves, but would expend themselves within themselves. No secretion of physical matter would result. So you see how mightily the consequences of the luciferic seduction express themselves to occult observation. If Lucifer had not interfered in the ordering of the world, human beings would never sweat, pardon the expression, for any activity or movement would expend itself within the relevant organ. Nothing would make its way from the gland to the outside. This, then, is, secondly, a preponderance of the ether body over the astral body. In order to link the specific nature of our world of sense with the first instance of preponderance, we can say the preponderance of the physical body over the ether body is the cause of how our world of sense specifically appears to us. We can then continue by saying the preponderance of the ether body over the astral body tells us how we feel about ourselves. The overall state of our feelings about ourselves, insofar as they are expressed in the body, arises from the preponderance of the ether body over the astral body. This preponderance brings about our subjective feelings regarding our purely bodily state, the overall feeling of our body. But now, to continue with our considerations, we shall have to apply a different pattern. It would be easy to proceed according to the same pattern, because we would simply say, having constructed the preponderance of the physical body over the ether body, followed by the preponderance of the ether body over the astral body, the third matter to consider would be the preponderance of the astral body over the eye. But to do this would merely amount to setting up a chart based on purely intellectual principles, and it would lead nowhere. So we cannot continue along these lines. It is a fact that if, having learned about certain spiritual facts, one were to proceed diagrammatically in accordance with the intellect, it would lead us to something quite different from reality. One cannot continue along intellectual lines. Or, if one did, one might proceed for a little while, but then arrive at something different. So, now, our third consideration presupposes a reversal of preponderance, the preponderance of the astral body over the ether body. Our third consideration must again involve the relationship between the astral body and the ether body, but this time, our clairvoyant observation reveals a preponderance of the astral body over the ether body. This preponderance is indeed the most important of the observations we have undertaken thus far. You see, if I were to give you the most rough and ready portrayal of the human being, an entirely materialistic description, I could simply represent him in the manner found in a good many materialistic books as a capacious mechanism for digestion, a mechanism which eats and digests and builds its body from the substances it has taken in through eating and then distributed in a variety of ways, and so on. You will indeed find that the materialistic worldview describes the human being as little more than a capacious mechanism for digesting and eating, a mechanism which takes in substances from outside and processes them inwardly, distributing them in various ways to the muscles, the bones, the sinews, and so on. A rough and ready view of the human being, which disregards what it means to perceive a sense-perceptible world, or to have an overall sensation of the body through being aware of specific glandular secretions, a view which takes account solely of how food is taken in and how its substances are transformed into blood, into the circulation of the blood, and so on. Such a rough and ready view is aware solely of the material process. And this is, in fact, what we mean by the physical expression of the preponderance of the astral body over the ether body. As you know, when we view the world spiritually, we have to be aware of something spiritual which exists in the background of everything sense-perceptible. What is sense-perceptible is only the external semblance. So behind all the taking in and processing of food, we have to see the preponderance of the astral body over the ether body. Thus, the preponderance of the astral body over the ether body finds expression in the normal processes of organic life insofar as these are physical. In other words, in the normal physical and organic life processes. So, we have discovered something remarkable, and I hope you will take note of it in the right way. You have to realize that what materialism often regards as the total human being, and indeed what most people are chiefly concerned with, taking in food and distributing the substances to the various organs of the body, all this has been brought about by nothing other than the luciferic influence causing a displacement which resulted in a preponderance of the astral body over the ether body. What I mean is that if Lucifer had not existed at the outset of human evolution, and if he had not displaced the astral and the ether body in the manner described, then human beings would not eat and digest substances in the way they do. What the materialistic view regards as the main characteristic of the human being is a purely luciferic deed. It is nothing other than the product of a displacement between astral body and ether body, which has caused the astral body to gain some activity through Lucifer, which gives it a preponderance over the ether body. This has been given to human beings by Lucifer, and it has brought about the human being's ability to take in physical foods. This was not originally intended for the human being. He should have had a way of existing and living at a stage where there would have been no need for him to take in physical foods. This is awe-inspiringly expressed in the fact that Lucifer brought about what we call the expulsion from paradise. To be in paradise signifies nothing other than to be a spiritual being who has no need to take in and process physical foods. What most materialistically inclined human beings consider to be the highest delight is in fact an expulsion from paradise. Human beings have been punished not only by having to take in and process physical foods, they have been doubly punished in that most of them derive the greatest enjoyment from what in the Bible is described as the greatest loss, namely to have been driven out of paradise and therefore to be obliged to take in physical food. Human beings have changed to such an extent that for them, existing outside paradise has become their greatest delight. It is remarkable that we are having to realize this, but we must. At last we have arrived at our fourth consideration, and this concerns the relationship of the capital I with the astral body. Here the luciferic displacement brings about a preponderance of the I over the activity of the astral body. What we do not have, you see, is a preponderance of the astral body over the eye. Instead of proceeding along the lines of a chart, we must proceed according to observation, which shows us that whereas there is a double relationship between astral body and ether body, we have now come to a preponderance of the eye over the astral body. Here the relationship of the eye to the astral body is not as was originally intended prior to the interference by Lucifer. The eye is more egoistic. It is more I-ish than it should have been. It has become more egoistic, more I-ish than should have been the case. This has come about through the influence of Lucifer. What happened to bring about this preponderance in the fourth of our considerations? To understand it, we must take into account what the proper relationship between the I and the astral body ought to be. We can only recognize this proper relationship by, as it were, reconstructing it. As we human beings exist in the world today, living as we do under the influence of Lucifer, the relationship between the eye and the astral body is not correct, and so there is a preponderance of the eye. The human being is more eye-ish than he ought to be, if you will excuse this coined expression, which is, though, very appropriate. Actually, we have already completed the consideration, which shows us that what the eye should really be like. If we wisely and energetically and patiently train ourselves to attain what we earlier described as amazement, as the feeling of reverence for what is being explored, as the feeling of wisdom-filled harmony with the world's phenomena, and as acquiescence, then the eye attains the correct orderly relationship. Standing in relationship to the astral body in this way, it will give the impression to an unbiased observer, now the eye is correct. Now it has reversed the influence that arose through Lucifer's interference. We can only restore the original relationship by training ourselves to attain the highest stage of those four qualities of soul already described. And what does the relationship of the eye to the astral body then become? Well, that is a remarkable thing. You can glean what is meant by paying close attention to certain chapters in my book titled How to Know Higher Worlds. In our present-day situation, we are permanently bound up with our thinking, feeling, and will. It is very difficult to reach a condition in our external consciousness in which we exist solely within our eye, without being bound up with thinking, feeling, and will. Try and force yourselves to comprehend the pure concept of the eye. The effort of grasping the pure thoughts of the eye makes our anthroposophical friends gasp when Dr. Unger again and again exhorts them to think this pure thought of the eye without involving any of their thinking, feeling, or will. This shows you how difficult it is to reach the eye as pure thought, quite apart from extricating it from all that thinking, feeling, and will. When we are so tied up in our soul, all manner of thinking, feeling, and will expressions flash through it, and desires as well. One is never separated from thinking, feeling, and will with one's eye. But through the four conditions already described, one can step outside the thinking, feeling, and will and look at the eye as something outside oneself. We must be as indifferent to our own thoughts as we are to objects around us, so that we can no longer say, I am thinking. Instead, our own eye is like a process running its course without having anything to do with us. And the same must be the case with feeling and will. Even thinking only a little about one's soul characteristics encourages us to say, this is something which one can imagine as an ideal, but an ideal which can be fulfilled. But we are, in fact, so mingled with our thinking, feeling, and will that it is exceedingly difficult to extricate ourselves. It is very difficult to make our way through the world with the attitude, "Here I am, walking along in the world, but I always carry with me a companion who is a part of me, one who is a kind of double of myself." The thinking, the feeling, and the will carry on side by side with me. I am separate from this. I am what I am in my I. And I walk along side by side with this threefold companion, like three sacks which I carry with me, one of which is stuffed with my thinking, another with my feeling, and the third with my will. Until we begin to practice this three-sack theory, we really cannot come to an adequate conception of the opposition of the I to the thinking, the feeling, and the will as it was originally intended to be by the divine beings before Lucifer made his approach to the human being. The human being was to have become an observer of himself, not one who experiences himself within himself. What form did the temptation, that original temptation, take? Let us put it as simply as possible. It consisted, if I may now somewhat simplify this description, in Lucifer approaching that human I, which the human being was to have received in all its integrity alongside the astral body, which had already been given to man on Old Moon, and saying, "See here, O man, how dull it will be to go about with this single center of your I am, while being able only to look on at everything else. Surely it is far more amusing to submerge yourself in your astral body. Let me give you the power to submerge yourself in your astral body, so that there is no need for you to remain one-sidedly with your I, while only looking on at your double. Instead, you may submerge yourself in it. And so that you need not feel as though you are drowning when you submerge yourself in your astral body, I shall protect you by giving you some of my power." Thus the I submerged itself, and so that it should not drown, it became inoculated with luciferic power. And the luciferic power thus absorbed by the human being became the preponderance of the I over the astral body, an augmented I-ishness, which is actually a kind of luciferity. What is this in reality? How do we encounter it in life? Initially, this luciferity, this excessively large I-ishness, is something we encounter through being mixed up with our thoughts, and then also with our feelings and our impulses of will. Initially, it is a matter of our thoughts. If Lucifer had not approached the human being, we would never have conceived the crackpot idea. Please excuse the expression, which is crazy for others, but meaningful for us, that we possess reason, that we cherish thoughts within ourselves. Instead, we would have known that the thoughts are outside us, that we must observe our thinking. The human being would have practiced observation until the thought emerged, until the meaning of his thinking became clear. This is depicted, for example, in my book titled The Philosophy of Freedom, also known as, readers aside, also known as Intuitive Thinking as a Spiritual Path, also available on this audio website. End of readers aside. It would never have occurred to the human being to say, "I must bring together all kinds of thoughts. I must form a judgment within myself." Forming judgments within ourselves, independently of what is revealed to us, is a luciferic element within us. In this way, all our reasoning, insofar as we regard it as one of our characteristics, is an error. It was Lucifer's temptation which gave us the idea that we are supposed to possess reason. So, now, you will understand how, in a certain sense, this reasoning came about as a consequence of a displacement, and that our reasoning can, therefore, by no means be regarded as the measure for all our understanding concerning reality. I pointed out at Karlsruhe that it is entirely understandable for a person who relies on his reasoning to say, if I want to comprehend the resurrection at the mystery of Golgotha, there is nothing for it but to disregard my reasoning, for whatever my reasoning can assert must contradict the resurrection. Thus speaks the human being of the 19th century, and thus speaks even the liberal theologian of the 19th century. How can such a person expect to comprehend the mystery of Golgotha, which is a deed lacking any connection with Lucifer, a deed which lies entirely beyond the sphere of Lucifer, a deed which came about in order to overcome the sphere of Lucifer? How can such a person ever expect to comprehend such a thing by means of his reasoning, which was given to him by Lucifer? It goes without saying that one's own reasoning can never comprehend these things. Our reasoning is a Luciferic gift. So it is not suitable for comprehending things which have nothing to do with Lucifer's workings. This is the deeper meaning in the matter. If the mystery of Golgotha were to be comprehensible to human reasoning, my dear friends, then there would have been no need for it to take place. It would have been entirely unnecessary. The very purpose for that event is to balance out the displacement which was created by Luciferic influence. Its intention is to cure human beings of the singular arrogance, the singular effrontery of reasoning, which expresses itself in the presumption that by employing this reason, human beings can comprehend everything. This is the point at which we must grasp that reasoning as such has its limits. I have many times declared that human knowledge has its limits. However, it is reasoning as such which has its limits. And there's a chart here, beginning at the top. Physical body to ether body. Number one, preponderance of physical body over ether body. World of the senses. Next is ether body to astral body. Number two, preponderance of ether body over astral body. Overall bodily state of well-being. The next one is astral body to ether body. Number three, preponderance of astral body over ether body, normal physical organic life processes. And then eye to astral body. Number four, preponderance of the eye over the astral body, the eye interwoven with thinking, feeling, and will. And in between ether body to astral body and astral body to ether body, there's an asterisk, and it says, this is where Lucifer and Ahriman meet, in between 2 and 3. If you now look at the chart we have been developing, you will say, it shows where the original disorder originated. So what must the first disorder have been in connection with the Luciferic temptation? Obviously, the one which we have described as the preponderance of the eye over the astral body. All the influence arising from Lucifer stems from the way it gave the eye its Luciferic power, making it mingle impurely with thinking, feeling, and will, thus gaining preponderance over the astral body. From this, then, also arose the preponderance of the astral body over the ether body. Thus was the balance in the human being upset. It is as though the Luciferic influence administered a blow to the astral body, and that, in its turn, the astral body then passed this on, and thus gained its preponderance over the ether body. But from this point on, the effect does not continue. The ether body does not simply replicate the blow again. It is like hitting a buoyant ball. The blow penetrates to a certain extent and then bounces back. We can first speak of an excess of the astral body over the ether body, but then the matter is reversed, so that the ether body gains a preponderance over the astral body. It bounces back, it springs back. Here at the number 2, the preponderance is reversed. and thence arises the preponderance of the physical body over the ether body. These two administer a blow in reverse. Why do they do this? This happens because, whereas Lucifer has been at work administering blows, here Ahriman hits back in the physical body and the etheric body. So that here in the middle, where on the one hand the preponderance of the ether body over the astral body and of the physical body over the ether body is at work, while on the other hand we have the preponderance of the astral body over the ether body and of the eye over the astral body, Ahriman and Lucifer come up against one another. They meet here. There is a central point in man where, in his own being, Lucifer and Ahriman encounter one another. Here the human being has the opportunity either to swing over to the side of Lucifer and push the astral body into the ether body more deeply than is good for him, or he has the opportunity to accept the impact of Ahriman and allow the ether body to be pushed more deeply into the astral body than is right and normal. These are the forces with which we have to grapple. It will be our next task to deal with the way in which we are nowadays, everywhere, confronted with how certain forces work. Apart from the one instance when we spoke about the preponderance of the astral body over the ether body, where we looked at how substances are processed, how foods are taken in and processed, we have not yet come across the question of how physical substance works. What we shall have to do is investigate spiritually, from a certain angle, what substance, what matter, actually is. This is the question with which we shall begin tomorrow. The end of Lecture 3.